what we want the Fab Lab as it evolves and has become bigger and bigger, even beyond what we ever dreamed, is how we can make things better with it. Because at the SC Johnson IMET Center, our education platforms out there is all about the fusion of education and application. The Fab Lab gives us that ability to apply our technologies, and no better way to apply our technologies versus a service-oriented project for the community to help out different people, different subsets, and different organizations. And we're here today blessed with an awesome organization that we were really looking forward to working with.
Yeah, and it's a really great example of how I met these guys 2 years ago, and I have a little bit of background in museum history. My last job, I worked at a museum, and they were developing an exhibition. And they kind of came to the Fab Lab with, you know, we have some ideas, we're thinking about doing this, and it was a great example of, you know, they thought of us. They thought of the Fab Lab. Can you guys help with this? Now, a couple years ago when this started, of course, I don't think we helped you guys that much. so hopefully this year we're doing a little bit more, helping them get graphics up, introducing some 3D printing into some of the design. And the scope of the exhibition was centered around Black Wall Street, but also prolific Black neighborhoods in the country, you know, ones that had great legacy and really great provenance, and, you know, where they are and how they developed and what happened. And it's going to take the form of about four different kiosks with two screens that are up. One will have a presentation, which Desmar did, really beautiful presentation. And then there's going to be an interactive map that kind of talks about some of these communities. So I'm going to let our guests introduce themselves now, and I'm going to start over here to my left. So.
Hi, my name is Betsy Kennedy, and I am a library technician over in the Racine campus of the Gateway Technical College. And I joined the team just this year, working to kind of behind the scenes on a LibGuide. So I'm doing more of a touring map of different neighborhoods that are prolific in the Black community.
Hi, and I'm Shayla Malone. I am the transition specialist on the Racine campus, and I've been with the committee for Black Wall Street since it kind of started. We started planning back in 2020, actually before we went on break, and so I've been a part of the team since then. So yeah, so thanks for having us, John and Steve, for inviting us on the show today.
Last but not least, I'm Desmar McDuffie, student support specialist for the multicultural program here at Gateway on the Kenosha campus. Like Shayla, I've been on this subcommittee of the Black History Month committee since its inception, and we really started to, develop this Black Wall Street focus on Black neighborhoods. Actually during the pandemic. So again, we're excited to join you all today, and thank you.
No, it's great having the three of you here, and we're really excited. One of the things that really intrigued me about this opportunity was finding out more about Black Wall Street. For those in the audience that don't know about it, what is Black Wall Street?
So it was, Black Wall Street was a thriving neighborhood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You may have heard of the Greenwood District, and so many different businesses, whether it be churches, movie theaters, you name it, they had it. There was unfortunately an incident that occurred during the height of their prominence, where an African American male got onto an elevator with a Caucasian female who was working the elevator, and there was a disagreement or a misunderstanding, and it became this big issue within the city. And some of you all may have heard of the Tulsa massacre, and that, you know, it really just decimated that community as far as the businesses you know, left a lot of the African-American citizens displaced. Red Cross was very helpful in, you know, helping these well-established people, you know, kind of, you know, readjust and pivot, you know, from, you know, like I said, just being established to now just trying to piece things together. But it was, you know, a terrible moment in history, unfortunately. But it was something that was just maybe one of many. It may have been the most pronounced situation, but it was one of many situations like that that happened throughout the country.
But that whole area back before the really horrible incident that occurred was an amazing, vibrant, thriving culture into itself, its own little, kind of like the Bronx or the different areas of the U.S. that have their own notoriety, their own feel when you walk into that.
Right.
This area had that feel to it, and that's what was amazing about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to point out, the exhibition highlights, it's how many neighborhoods? Is it 27?
Yeah, so yeah. How it evolved, so we focused the previous installment of Black History Month on Black Wall Street, that whole experience.
Right.
We were able to secure images from the Tulsa Historical Society. Also, we were able to retrieve, we have a video from the, I think it's from the Smithsonian, that kind of gave, mm-hmm. you know, a brief overview of the whole experience.
Yeah.
And then, which was probably, for me, the highlight of the whole presentation, we were able to secure a video from one of the surviving citizens from that period, from that time, and actually from the video, she was actually being honored in Congress.
Right. That's in your presentation. I love that video. It's really great.
Yeah, it's awesome to hear her talking, and mm-hmm. and actually her brother was there with her.
Yeah.
And so so it was great to be able to put that together. And then as we were planning for this year's installment of Black History Month, we wanted to highlight that presentation once again, because you know, with the pandemic and everything, we weren't able to really fully get that out to everyone.
Right.
And now that we're back on campus and have that opportunity, we wanted to give that presentation some more light.
Yes.
But then in addition to that, just evolve and highlight some of the other neighborhoods. After we, you know, one of our other colleagues on the subcommittee, her name is Jamadi Coloriano. We were brainstorming this year as far as what we could do to go a step further, and we started to look up all these different neighborhoods throughout the country,
right,
that were, you know, prominent, thriving Black African American neighborhoods. And so we, you know, as you mentioned earlier, we were able to, you know, come up with 20 neighborhoods throughout the country to highlight.
Nice.
And so we're excited to be able to, again, just, you know, put that, you know, highlight Black Wall Street, but also bring some notoriety to these other neighborhoods. And some of them are, you know, kind of right in our neighborhood, right in our, you know, in our background.
Our region,
in
yeah.
our region.
Yeah. I think it's really important that these neighborhoods are excellent examples of shattering stereotypes, and I think it's really a wonderful thing. If you look at Black Wall Street, it's probably one of the most extreme and one of the ones that really calls for reflection on ourselves as a culture and a people. Mm-hmm. So to have these other great examples of communities that are prolific and had this rich history, that's just, it's awesome. Elizabeth, or Betsy, I'm sorry, maybe you could talk a little bit about developing the app for this.
Sure. This is something that we're adding to the LibGuide
for Black History Month, which we put together, I believe, 2 years ago.
Yes.
So we are creating what's called a story map. This is a website that we used, and we've added some photos and information, links to websites and other details about the different neighborhoods. So users that access this on the LibGuide will go on a tour starting, I believe, somewhere in the south and traveling through up, they'll be in Chicago. We've got a couple neighborhoods. I think we go down to Florida and we end up in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we go several places and learn a lot along the way.
So it's really interesting that IT has become a really important component of this. Now, I mentioned before, I actually have a little museum background, and I don't think a lot of people understand the physical involved in developing an exhibition. And when they first came to me and were talking about this exhibition, I'm like, this sounds like something a major museum would develop and travel all over the country. So we started talking physical, and that's kind of where the Fab Lab comes in. Now, IT is a big component in this as well. So a lot of the elements of exhibitions have moved to being a little bit more computer-oriented or display monitor-oriented. So, and what you're going to see when you come check out this exhibition, the Fab Lab didn't actually do it all. So Betsy's a great example of someone who pulled up an app and generated this really amazing presentation. But again, this has become so prolific, it's almost a cultural thing in our society now to be able to put that into it. So the Fab Lab was instrumental at helping out just with solidifying, I think, your ideas more than actually physically building something. And then this year we're going to physically work on building something. So I don't know, Shayla, we haven't heard from you yet. Let's What have you come to discover in kind of developing this exhibition? Tell us about the process, what you've learned, what you found interesting. Is that enough questions for you? Or?
Yes, it is, John. So in this whole process, even just going back to the history of Black Wall Street, even myself as being working in higher education for the last 11 years, I wasn't even aware of what Black Wall Street all entailed. And so just even being a part of the subcommittee, I was able to educate myself on what Black Wall Street was all about and just how we had this thriving community back in time, right, before the massacre happened. And so I felt like when we came to John, when we started having these ideas about how we wanted to display Black Wall Street, and when we came to you, John, it was like you took our ideas and you went to like 10.0, right? And it was just like, oh my God, like, yes, this whole visual of like, you know, able to see this whole neighborhood, because a lot of, you just got to think about it, a lot of people, even my age, younger than me, even some older than me, they haven't even experienced or heard about Black Wall Street, right? So to see this interactive display of Black Wall Street and then now even other thriving communities, because even if you look at some of the stats and the data behind how long the Black dollar lasts in the Black community, it doesn't last that long. And so to know that there's some thriving communities out here that is trying to keep the Black dollar within the in the Black community is huge, because you look at some other cultures and their money lasts a long time within their own community. So it's just nice that and great that the Fab Lab, you were able to take our ideas and just put it out there for display with no hesitation. That's the thing about it, is that John came in, we told him, and he just took it off and ran with it. We thought that, you know, he probably would get this thing going all the way in Washington, D.C. somewhere. Because that's how big John's idea was, and we just hung on to every word, like, yes, this is amazing, this sounds great. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I agree with Shayla. I think for us, I think it was just the enthusiasm and the passion that you displayed on the topic. Like, we thought we were going to be coming in and, you know, educating you on a little bit of what we knew, but you actually, you know, kind of knocked our socks off in regards to what you knew about it and the connections and the resources that you had. But you know, we were just like, wow, well, you know, we only got a short amount of time, so we can't really, you know, a lot of the ideas, we were just like, man, well, maybe we can try to make this work going into next year, because I know we were talking about meeting right after last year's installment of Black History Month to really like try to see, you know, how we can make this bigger and better. So
I appreciate you guys saying all these nice things, but if you're seeing me get excited, it's because your original concept and idea are really good and they're great. Mm-hmm. And so don't undersell, you know, what you guys had on the table before I even walked through the door.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then I know my first questions were usually physical ones because I'm used to putting together an exhibition and putting it up. I'm like, how big is it? You know, where are we going to put it up? What's going to be involved in it? I think I even asked you guys if you were going to have different areas. I was used to thinking of a layout of an exhibition in terms of the different concepts you wanted to present to the public.
Well, that was the original concept that we were planning on, you know, having. We were planning on having it, and the vision was to have it on the Racine campus. You know, have that exhibition there, housed there for that for the month of February. We're in the garden room where people can just stop in and just go through and see all the different images and pictures that we were able to secure from the Tulsa Historical Society. But again, with, you know, our plans weren't aligned with COVID, and so so that, you know, didn't allow that to happen. But I think, you know, this idea is just, you know, it's just the evolution of it. And it's great that we are able to, again, bring people up to speed with the, you know, the our previous presentation, but also expand on that and have this great interactive map where people can come in and, you know, everybody likes to touch things. So touch the screen and be able to kind of explore and just really, you know, feed their curiosity in regards to, you know, this topic.
I think it's my own personal belief that a really good exhibition doesn't have to just be up at a certain time.
Right.
So I'm really hoping that we look into something that's permanently on display. And if you are out there in the community, I would highly recommend you try to get by one of the three displays that will be up, and we'll go into where, and check it out and see what it is. And hopefully, with a little luck, maybe we'll put something up on the website as well, so people who can't get out and check it out. But it's definitely worth getting out to see. Now, you guys have a lot of events around this, so let's talk a little bit about some of that. I don't know who's best to talk on that. Anyone?
Yes, Mark. He's part of the History Committee.
So
Committee of one, right?
Yes.
So we do kick off the month with our Black History Month breakfast. You know, in addition to our Legacy of Black Neighborhoods exhibit, we also have this neat periodic table, you know, activity that our students can get involved in and learn more about the different African American Black figures who have done so much throughout history. We also have a door decorating contest for Black History Month for our students and our staff. We have a dessert reception in Elkhorn that, again, we hope to get, you know, a lot of people out to. And then we have, we end the month with our cookout in Kenosha. And we really wanted to make sure that we are able to touch all of our, you know, three main campuses with our different, you know, with one, at least one signature event. And then on Fridays at 3 p.m., we on Zoom, we usually have a listening session where we highlight throughout the month, you know, various genres of music that were influenced by, you know, African-American artists. So whether it be jazz, gospel, hip-hop, and R&B, so we just really we really just want it to be a fun but an educational experience throughout the month.
That's great. Most of it centers around a couple of weeks in the center there, right?
Right.
What weeks are those, the dates?
So for in particular for our Legacy of Black Neighborhoods event, so we're going to have the interactive map at all of our major events. So again, the kickoff in Racine, the dessert reception in Elkhorn, in the cookout in Kenosha, the display map will be there. The interactive map will be there. And then the week of February 20th through the 24th, we will have the actual exhibit displayed on all three campuses for students, staff, community to come in and take a look at not only the interactive map that we put together, but also the presentation on Black Wall Street that we developed last year. So we encourage you to check out the exhibit as well as the events throughout the month. You can always go to the Gateway website, gtc.edu/d365, to look at all of the different list of events throughout the month, the descriptions, and the locations for every event.
Excellent. Say that that email or the web address one more time, because I was just going to say, okay, there's got to be a calendar somewhere. So
gtc.edu/d365.
Yeah, for those of you who were scrambling for a pen or a pencil like I was. So definitely check it out. So we're really proud in terms of the fact that someone came to the Fab Lab with a creative idea and was looking for ways to kind of fill it out or augment it and looking for ways to help. So that was one of the things that we really enjoyed. Steve, you got anything you want to?
What was that website again?
Let's see if I remember it now, right?
www.gtc.edu.
I forgot about the slashes and the numbers there. Slash.
Yeah, that first part you should have been able to nail. Yeah. Easy.
So go ahead, Desmar. Give that to us one more time, please.
www.gtc.edu/d365.
So once again, www.gtc.edu/d365.
And also just keep in mind, too, that the locations of the exhibit will be out there, out in the public area. So on the Kenosha campus, it'll be in our atrium. On the Racine campus, it'll be in our Student Life Center. And then on the Elkhorn campus, it'll be in the atrium in the North Building.
Yeah. And to your point, John, what we're thinking about doing moving forward after the Black History Month, we're looking at spaces to actually house the presentation as well as the interactive map, so that people can, you know, come in, you know, throughout the year and take a look at it, whether it be in the library or in our Multicultural Resource Center, mm-hmm. On any of our campuses. So we're still trying to determine where the best place would be for us to house the presentation and the exhibit.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm sure we have a lot of corporate partners that would be interested. Nice high traffic areas. Mm-hmm. Uptown. I don't know if you guys know Scott. He's got there's a African American gallery down there. I'm sure he might be interested. So there's lots of opportunities. Oh, and if any of our listeners have ideas, please get in touch with us.
So I think part of it is Jamari's looking into the licensing for some of the photos. And right now it was for a single time use in one place. So we're trying to see if we can get it so that it can be borrowed out to like other libraries, like you were saying, or uptown galleries. And then can I plug the Lib Guide too?
Yes, yes, for sure. Please.
Desmar just mentioned the periodic table of Black excellence, and that is up right now. It's on the Gateway's Libraries website. So if you were to go to gtc.edu/library and visit the LibGuides on Black History Month, you can see already the amazing names that have been put together in different fields. And pretty soon the story map will be added to that. In addition, there's just a lot of resources that the library carries that support the Black History Month. And
I'll just say this real quick. You know, Betsy's being modest as she speaks about all of this, but she has done a remarkable job, not only with our Black History Month Lib Guide, but all of our cultural months. she does a fabulous job of putting together these different lib guides with, you know, awesome resources, you know, to take advantage of. So I really encourage you all to, you know, tap into that, this wonderful resource.
Yep. Cool. And we'll look forward to expanding it and seeing where we can take it, where we can go. I even have my little sample here of my lithopane. Now, you guys in Radioland can't see this, but I have a photograph that we stuck in the 3D printer. And the 3D printer will take that photograph and analyze the grayscale. And where it's dark, it'll make it a little thicker. And where it's not, thinner. But it just prints it out in a flat thing. And then when you light it up in the back, and I'm going to light it up, and then everyone can say, ooh, ah, here, right? So I got to open up my phone and turn that on.
We actually did earlier.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, my light's not working now anyways.
Ooh.
Once the lithopane's lit up, it actually
it looks like a photograph.
It does.
And the one I got's really small, but they'll be bigger when we get there. I wanted ones that everybody could see here. So I'm going to go back to our host for a second. Scott, what do you think? What do you got going on?
I think it's awesome. Yeah. You guys did a great job today. And to all of our guests, thank you so much for stopping in, and thanks for listening. Is there anything you guys want to say to wrap up?
The only thing we really want to say is how excited we are, not only with this event, but events like this with the Fab Lab, because this ties into exactly the culture and the concept of what the Fab Lab we wanted to evolve into, far more than just a couple 3D printers and a laser cutter, because it's the application of that technology that is very important to us at the SC Johnson Eisman Center for all of our programs to be able to use this technology to do something with it. And this was a great example of that.
Yeah, I think the culture at Gateway has always been like, how can we help? What can we do? How can we collaborate? I know I've done a lot of collaborations with Civil and Steve. A lot of times we rely on the strength of our community and ourselves, and it's cross-platform. That's the word we use for it, where we're looking at how we can connect with other people to make things better. Not necessarily just how well can I do, but how can I fold in everybody else? How can I make this a all-inclusive thing where everyone's involved in it? And how can I think about it differently? And creativity is a really important thing. And that's just something that Gateway has embraced from the beginning, which is part of the reason why I was so excited when you guys, you know, approached us. Because it also presents us with an opportunity to really, you know, just see how creative we can get. And certainly there was no lack of creativity around this table. So.
Yeah.
Would anyone else like to add anything?
I just wanted to add just saying thank you for the collaboration. Just because I feel like it's just enhancing everything that we wanted to do and just bringing it a different aspect of it. And then just also bringing it to the times that we are living in as well. Like everything is all technology based. And so just to even just bring that and just streamline, help us streamline that process, just want to say thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
And thank you for having us today.
Oh, yeah. It was our pleasure.
Thanks again, John and Steve, and to our guests. You can always catch the latest Fab Lab show on the second Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. right here on WGTD-FM.
This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW-Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
And a very pleasant good morning. I'm Steve Brown, welcoming you into this edition of Education Matters here on WGTDHD. There are two segments on today's program. My first guest will be Dr. Jack Peltz, and we are going to be talking about some current research that he has conducted about the impact of what time school starts in our public schools. My second guest will be Mark Walsh. And Mark is a writer who focuses in on school law, and he writes for Education Week as well as some other publications.